Alan Collar here, and I'm talking to Stephen Arnold, who is the Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of Aoris Investment Management. And, well, they had a good year last year. They did 40% return, well above their benchmark, which is the MSCI Global Index, and pretty well, you know, up there with most investors, but they are a pretty focused value type investor. And as I point out in my first question, they haven't got any of the big tech stocks in their portfolio. No Tesla and no Facebook, no Google, and so on. They're all about high quality industrial companies and retailers. So here's Stephen Arnold, the Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of Aoris Investment Management. Well, Stephen, you produced a return of 40% last year, and I noticed that you haven't got any fangs in your portfolio. There's no Facebook or Google or Apple or Amazon. So tell us how you did that.
Well, I think one way I like to think about the last couple of years is a defining feature, in my view, has been a separation between the best businesses and the rest. And one analogy I like to use is if I'm road cycling, which I sometimes do, when you're going downhill, there's not a lot of separation between faster and slower riders. But when you're going uphill, then there's a big separation. And I think the last couple of years has been full of challenges. It started out with supply chain challenges and labor shortages and COVID shutdowns and so on and so on. And so they've really produced an array of unexpected challenges to all sorts of businesses. And through that, we've seen the best businesses pull away from their peers at an accelerating rate. And so right across our portfolio, we always want to own the best businesses. And we look to validate that by seeing them take share and grow faster than their peers in an ordinary year. But the last couple of years haven't been ordinary. And what's really helped us last year is that these outstanding businesses that we own have grown organically, taken a lot of market share and pulled away from their peers at a faster than normal rate.
So what are some examples of those businesses?
Yeah, it can give you a few. Costco is one good example. So they are a sort of very large retailer operating in more than a dozen countries, with the US, of course, being their home market. And what's helped that business be very successful and grow their revenue a lot faster than other grocery retailers, non-food retailers, all through the last 24 months or so, has been, number one, their sophistication of their supply chain. In order to keep the shelves full when product simply hasn't been that easy to get hold of, they've got enormous advantages versus, the hypothetical retailer down the road. Number two, in an environment where it was quite challenging for employees, firstly through the COVID safety protocols, and then in more recent months, the competition for labour and the inflation we've seen in the labour markets, Costco has got a long, multi-decade standing corporate philosophy to pay well above the statutory minimum wage for their employees. They look after their employees, the employees stay a lot longer, and they provide a much better service to their customers. And that's a great sort of foundation of their competitive strength. And that really came to the fore last year, where the employees stayed and people were able to, they were able to successfully hire in a challenged labor environment to provide the foundations for their very strong revenue growth last year. Costco is one good example. LVMH is another example. Been through periods in different geographies where shops have been closed, shops have been opened. What they sell in luxury retail, luxury goods, doesn't naturally lend itself to online retail in the way that sort of many other goods do. But what's really defined that business is, firstly, they had the resources to continue to invest in their brand such that when shops reopened, there would be a lot of appetite for what they sell. Looked after their employees such that the stores would be well-staffed and continue to invest in creative people and innovation. So they had a very, very strong calendar 21, and including a very, very strong end to the year, which they reported just a week ago. So they're two examples of...
It's interesting those two examples are at the sort of extreme ends of the, what you might call the price spectrum. There's LVMH, which is, as you say, luxury, and Costco, which is pretty discount, So do you kind of have a preference one way or the other? Do you think that luxury goods businesses are you know, in general a good thing to invest in, or would you tend towards retail, discount retail, or does it not matter? It depends on the company.
Yeah, that's it. Well, you framed the question in an interesting way, and one way to think about it is that we like to own businesses that provide value for their consumers. Now, in the case of Costco, when you pay $60 a year to be a member, then you expect Costco to deliver value in terms of the quality and price of their goods. Likewise, for LVMH, when you pay a significantly higher price for the goods that they sell, which range from leather goods to perfumes and cosmetics and so on, you expect a well above average, superior product quality. So it's all about value. It's less about price. It's more about value. And secondly, we like businesses where the value proposition is not static. It evolves. And what the customer, might be a business customer or a consumer, is getting this year is better than what they got last year. Now, the example I often give is Campbell Soups hasn't really changed since Andy Warhol painted it. It's not a product that each year gets better. But you know, the innovation that LVMH brings to their consumers evolves and gets better, and people are willing to pay more for that. Likewise with Costco, the product and service proposition when you walk through their doors gets better every year. So it's number one, do they provide value? And number two, does that value proposition evolve and improve through time? And you see LVMH and Costco are both good examples of that, albeit the price points are very different. And you'd see a similar proposition if you look at other businesses in our portfolio that serve business customers like an Accenture in consulting and IT outsourcing. They provide great value to their customers. Their customers stay a long time, spend a lot more with them, and that value proposition is constantly improving and evolving.
In your December letter to investors, you talked about the things that helped you perform well in 2021. And one of them was seeking and appreciating mean aversion, not reversion, aversion. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, well, I think it's a shorthand to what we were discussing before about the best businesses pulling away from their peers. Now, I think if I think back to my university days and my early years in investing, I was schooled in that classical view that bad businesses become less bad and good businesses become less good and they converge on normal. And that may be true for many industries, but it's not universally true. And we look for businesses, great businesses, that not just sort of stay great, but improve and further move away from their peers and move away from average. So that's, I think, really for us, the defining feature of the last couple of years is these outstanding businesses, rather than being pull back towards average in difficult periods, moved away from their peers at an accelerating rate. And that's mean aversion is a good shorthand way to think about that.
And how do you find them?
Well, I think firstly, what we look for is businesses that have been around a long time. That gives you a lot of proof points, and not just the business has been in business, but how they've negotiated difficult periods, whether it's SARS or the GFC or periods of inflation back in the 70s, businesses that might have only been around for a decade or two. How do we know how they'll go in more challenging periods? How deep rooted is the culture? If it's a relatively new business, it's perhaps that culture and the values that will shape their decision making doesn't have the strong roots that a business like an LVMH or like a Costco does. Of course, you look for the financial outcomes and including growth. Great businesses don't just tread water; they grow, and we're looking for many years for that premise of mean aversion to be demonstrated. We don't want to look forward and imagine it could happen. We want to look backward and see that it has happened, for a long period. And lastly, we want to understand why. We don't just buy the outcomes. We want to understand what are the foundations of Costco's strengths. Why do customers keep coming back? Why do their 100 million members renew at a rate of 91-92%, which means that they stay members a very long time. They're willing to pay high membership fees periodically, and they spend a lot of money at Costco. Can we understand why customers behave that way? And that gives us confidence that looking forward, all of that will persist and further that mean aversion process.
The second reason you say that you did well in 2021 was staying the course and sticking with companies that had a poor year. So you're saying that you pointed out that Accenture and Costco, for example, were among the poorest performers in 2020, but they did pretty well in 2021. I mean, just take us through how you decide that they're actually not, you know, that they're worth sticking with. I mean, what because some companies that have a bad year aren't worth sticking with, are they?
Well, that's right. You've got tough decisions to make sometimes when we observe that businesses have been neglected by the market. In the case of Costco and Accenture, well, what we focus on is the operational performance of the business more so than the stock price performance when we're thinking about, you know, is this a business that belongs in our portfolio that we should, you know, persist with? In both of those cases, operationally, they had very strong 2020s. But if you cast your mind back, you know, this was a period when, you know, the market had a bit of an infatuation with exciting new disruptive technology businesses, and companies like Accenture and Costco looked a bit dull and were somewhat left behind, even though, you know, they continued to take market share, grow, win new customers, create great value for their customers. But in 2021, when those markets, particularly the case of Accenture, businesses started spending money again and green lighting some big IT transformation processes or projects, then the good work in 2020 was reflected in the profit and loss and the financial outcomes for Accenture, and the market took notice, and we could see the ingredients for it through 2020, but the market woke up somewhat last year, so they were strong businesses. And I think for us, the confidence in staying the course, to come back to, you know, what I think is a good expression, it comes from, do we understand why the business is competitively winning? Now, can we see it evidenced over a long period of time? Can we see the ingredients for it to persist? And do we feel like we own the business today at or below what that business is worth? And if all those questions are answered yes, then you know, we can be confident in staying the course. But it becomes a lot more challenging if you feel like you're owning a less good business, that maybe you know, the pendulum's turning against it, and they're not growing, they're competitively losing share, or maybe it's a business that people have had to imagine this loss-making company will one day become profitable and make money, and but maybe that day never arrives, and it's a lot harder to be confident in staying the course, you know, should you take that approach.
So what sort of year do you think we're in for in 2022, given that interest rates are now look set to rise?
Yeah, well, if I think about it from the external macro environment and then what it means for investors, what sort of businesses people should be thinking about owning. Look, I think there's a good chance that investors will be having to get used to a pretty unfamiliar set of conditions, and that also applies to central bankers and those setting monetary policy. We've come out of a very, very unusually stable decade or so, where inflation didn't move around very much. You know, we were close to full employment most of the time. Interest rates were low and stable, and that allowed households to take on a lot of debt. We've had a pretty good decade or so of sort of post-GFC economic growth. But we may be, it's not for sure, but it may well be that, you know, we're entering a period where inflation is not low and stable. Inflation is suddenly higher and stays higher and doesn't fade away in the way that, you know, central bankers had anticipated 6 months ago. Maybe they have to fairly materially increase official interest rates, and it feeds through into what people pay each month for their mortgages. And that will create a pretty unfamiliar set of circumstances for households and unfamiliar set of circumstances for investors. So that's a challenge, is an environment that's going to present a lot of things that feel pretty new. Now, when we think, how should investors react to that? For us, the way we would go about things is own businesses where higher interest rates or tighter monetary policy matter as little as possible. If you own businesses that have, where, you know, perhaps banks, perhaps the interest rate spreads drive the economics and profitability, then, you know, perhaps they're not the best businesses to own. Or businesses where the market's really embraced the valuation because low discount rates mean cash flows a long, long way into the future are worth a lot today, and that equation might change if interest rates increase, then we wouldn't own those. So I own businesses where higher interest rates matter as little as possible. And for us, it goes back to, if you think this year is going to have some challenges in it, well, you look back over the last couple of years, what sort of businesses did well in challenging circumstances? And our answer to that would be, you know, these exceptional great businesses, these mean reverting aversion businesses pulling away from their peers, you know, like the Accentures and Costcos, who've shown that they can take share and grow during very disruptive, challenging 2020 and 2021. If 2022 brings more challenges, well, we're very confident that they will continue to pull away and separate themselves from their peers. And higher inflation and tighter monetary policy is not going to derail those businesses.
I mean, you're a global investor, so you tend to invest in international companies, but which Australian companies would fit your mean aversion criteria?
Alan, that's a pretty tough one for me to answer with any authority, because Australia is the one country in the world that we don't invest in. Although, of course, I read the local papers and try and be an informed citizen. So our local market's not one that I've really got much to offer. Sorry, Alan. What we want to own are businesses that have breadth. They do more than one thing in more than one place. There are many Australian companies that tend to be a bit narrow and do one thing in one place. So we like the breadth and diversification that comes with what international businesses, international markets.
Do you think it could be a good time for banks, do you?
Well, I think it's more that the macro conditions, you know, often matter a lot to banks, whether it's, is employment rising, are house prices rising, are people refinancing their houses, are people spending more on credit cards, are the interest rate spreads they earn on their loans healthy or under pressure? All of those things matter, and rising inflation and higher interest rates might help, you know, some of those variables and might be harmful in others. And so for us, banks are businesses that we're happy not to own. They're out of bounds for us, if you like, all the time. So we just find better opportunities elsewhere. Business, you know, we like to own macro agnostic, all weather businesses, rather than ones where interest rates, inflation might, you know, matter a lot in the way that they do for banks.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. Just finally, what are your fees, Stephen?
Fees, we have two options. We charge 1.1% management fees plus a 15% performance fee for any returns that we achieve in excess of our global equity benchmark.
Which is what?
Which is the MSCI All Country World Index ex Australia. So we charge a performance fee if we outperform our equity benchmark. We don't charge a fee against cash. Alternatively, for people that would rather not have a performance fee, we charge 1.5% flat. And then, you know, people know ahead of time what they're going to pay, not subject to performance fees.
What do most people go for?
Most people choose the former, the 1.1%. And if we outperform the 15% outperformance fee, that tends to be where most people have chosen to invest with us.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Thanks very much, Stephen. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks very much.
That was Stephen Arnold, the Chief Investment Officer and Managing Director of Aoris Investment Management.